It's Friday, June 6, 2025, from Peachfish Productions. It's The Gist. I'm Mike Peskin. It's not just The Gist. It's a Funny You Should Mention episode. So every episode of Funny You Should Mention is about testing the theories and theses of comedians. I don't love saying theses. It sounds like that other word. It was a little hard with our current guest, Chris Turner, but we actually wind up doing it because Chris Turner is a brilliant rapper, a flow rapper, a rapper who gets suggestions and immediately incorporates them into a brilliant bout of hip-hopery. If you want to go ahead, about 5 minutes into this episode, we play one of his full raps. You hear the tail end of him taking suggestions from the audience, and it's a full rap. It goes a bit long, but I included it so you would understand the brilliance of the guy. However, if our show here on Funny You Should Mention is your ideas, your premises, how much do you believe them? How can we really do that with Chris Turner? Well, I tweaked it a little bit, and I asked him about his mental process. We talked a lot about how he got into hip-hop. It's pretty fascinating how he thought that all of hip-hop was a purely improvised art form, and how he thinks of jokes. And there we get to what his premise is for why jokes are funny, but also you get to understand what he's really thinking when he's saying things, as he says, without thinking. This guy, if you ever get a chance to see him, it is a treat. It is a showstopper. So I give you Chris Turner on Funny You Should Mention. Hi, welcome back to Funny You Should Mention. Our guest today is Chris Turner, who does things that I've never seen a comedian do. And in fact, he's always a showstopper here at the Comedy Cellar. He can only close out a show. He's literally the guy you can't follow. And it's because, well, we'll get into it, but among his many talents is, it's been described as the best freestyle rapper in the game being pretty narrowly defined as comedy, nerd, white audiences. No, he literally has been described as one of the best freestyle rappers alive. And what he does, I mean, this is what I love doing. I love taking friends of mine to a show where there's a great comedy bill and the last guy is Turner, and he just always blows people's mind. Welcome to Funny You Should Mention in the Gist.
Thank you. What a lovely introduction.
It's true. It's true.
But the problem with it is it makes, no matter how many people say, look, this guy's good, or you have to see this, they always go, well, clearly you're wrong. Clearly you've had a concussion. This person can't be good. They must be terrible. Have you seen them? Have you heard them? Did you understand what he said he's going to do? That's not possible even for, like, a rapper who we've heard of. They can't make up raps.
Yeah. Someone who looks like
it's
this
very good.
Definitely cannot do it. And it is fun how every, I don't know, has there ever been a show when you introduce the premise, I am one of the greatest rappers in Britain, that doesn't get pushback or a laugh?
I just became an American citizen. And I think if I lean more into that, so I did a show in Jersey last week, and, you know, near the start, I'm like, oh, by the way, I'm one of you guys now. Then I introduced the rap, and obviously it's my show, so there's more of my fans there. But the general consensus was more like, oh, yeah, fuck yeah, you do this.
Oh, okay.
And I think if I'm more American, people go, well, of course you can rap. You're from here now.
Oh, I see.
But the vast majority of the time, and up into this point of history, in my British period, as I call it, it really was. So I'd love to do a rap. Like, I mean, some of my most kind of clicky YouTube videos are just because there was a moment where I go, so I'm going to do a rap for you. And then a black woman goes, oh, hell no. And then the whole crowd react to that. And I go, no, seriously, I promise you, it's going to be really good. What would you like a rap about? I like a rap about how you're going to suck. Yeah. Okay, cool. Here's a rap about how I'm going to suck.
Well, that still happens. I saw one from a couple of months ago where cultural appropriation, because you're stealing my culture, sir.
Yeah, that one wasn't even from the off. That was in the middle, after three suggestions, that was someone just like, cultural appropriation. I was like, cool, what are we culturally appropriating? She's like, no, you are. And I was like, yeah, but what am I appropriating? And she's like, black hip hop from the 90s. I was like, well, I'm glad you think I'm appropriating the greatest decade of hip hop rather than, well, everybody get up on the mic and I'm going to rock and I'll rock it right. I'm teaching my 3-year-old about hip hop at the moment. And hip hop is quite fun to teach in a very linear fashion. Like when you're teaching classical music or you're teaching death metal, two other genres that we're teaching her, if you start from the beginning, it can be a little bit like, like with death metal, it's like, oh, it's a little bit raw and weird. And then if you teach classical music from the start, it's like, well, no, actually start with Mozart, start with really easy tuneful stuff. And with hip hop, you can go, no, in the 70s, it was major key, uplifting, dancehall inflected.
On the beat.
Party tunes.
Yes.
And it's really easy for her to not rap along, but she can understand. She can understand the rhymes. Like, we showed her the halftime show. I don't know when this is coming out. So from Super Bowl 2025 with Kendrick Lamar,
the most recent Super Bowl. Yes, still.
And she was watching it and she was really interested. But I'm like, I don't know if she's following what's being said here because it's fast and it's dense. And when you play, you know, some some Grandmaster Flash, she's like, yes, I know what you're saying.
Uptown, downtown, yeah. Holiday Inn. Thank you. So you've oriented me.
Yeah, you can really help on that. But yeah, I appropriate 90s hip hop. Of course I do. The best. Why not?
Do you? Well, first of all, when the woman yelled out appropriation, was she intending it to mean a suggestion? And if not, did you
No, she was upset.
But you took that and you pretended it was a suggestion to help the show.
Yeah.
Because you basically forced a yes and onto her.
Yeah. I mean, one of the best ways to deal with hecklers, and I don't want us to skate past this bit and have it be me being like, yes, of course I culturally appropriate. Like, no, it would be cultural appropriation if I didn't love it, didn't practice it a lot, didn't appreciate it, and wasn't good at it.
Right.
Final corner of the room. This is your moment to shine. So far, these suggestions have been 6 to 7 out of 10. I want you to blow it out the park with the most incredible, imaginative one so far this evening. Cultural appropriation. And what did you say? Reverse racism. My gosh, look at these. These social studies graduates. Ah, I go to Columbia and I've come to a comedy show to ruin it for everyone. Cultural appropriation and reverse racism. All right. I wish I'd taken Brexit, but no. Okay, with the reverse racism one, give me the races. Who's being racist to who? And be precise. Yeah, see, I could be a dickhead as well. Spanish people being racist to white people, lovely stuff. And then cultural appropriation, what culture should we appropriate in this? And be, again, be creative. Black hip-hop in the 90s. Wait, so black hip-hop in the 90s appropriating what? I am appropriating black hip-hop in the 90s. Great, cool. Guys, this is what we want at a 6:45 show. This is what we want. Spanish people being racist to white people. Appropriating 90s hip-hop. Biggie Smalls and Chicken Tikka Masala. Bill Nye, the science guy, is a bit of a dick. Sativa. Weed. Jesus Christ, this is... Hey, it's a heady brew. Let's see what we can do with it. Gina, tell you what. Usually, I'm like, yo, drop that beat, white girl. I feel like that'll upset you. So, the music, yeah, look at that. I'm feeling this. You guys feeling this? Yeah! Fingers crossed. I hope I'm good, because if this is shit, I am going to get absolutely murdered after the show. But don't worry, it's going to be good. Let's go. What, lady who said weed, what's your name?
Sheree.
Hip hooray, 420, April 20th, say Sheree's out there blazing every day. Check it out, she needs to succeed. Take the weed, pop it in the bong. My advice, take heed. Don't puff too long, inhale too strong. Otherwise your lungs can't bear. That pong is difficult to remove. Seeing all the clouds, sativa. No sleepy weed allowed. I leave the indica there, I need to stay awake. Blow clouds every day, make no mistake. I best boast, I'm chilling on the west coast. Snoop Dogg, gin and juice, they're my best bros. Yes, I might be appropriate in all of the 90s. Death Row Records, ever so mighty. I see Dr. Dre, he's there with the synth. He doesn't write his raps, but he could do it in a pinch. Seeing Eazy-E and N.W.A. passed away, R.I.P. A very sad day. Another guy who got shot was Biggie. He was rolling in his car in Los Angeles City, but he's from the East Coast. Yeah, you know, front and back, he was beeping with the West Coast. Bro, Tupac, sadly,
He got shot, pop, popper. Ironic, why? Because he's called Big Popper. What a punchline. They love it. Yeah, you say we got them hypnotized. Yo, give me the money, give me all of the cash. Christopher Wallace repping Brooklyn, put it on the map. I know the frustration, cultural appropriation coming over there from the chicken tikka masala nation. And there is likely a guy who doesn't like his nightly curry spicy. I walk in, I say I know it sounds silly. Here in London City, I don't like the chili. No spice for me, just the salt and pepper. Can you take chicken tikka go one better? Just mix the ketchup with the lovely cream. Oh, so good. I hope your kitchen is quite clean. I know what you do. Yes, you might vanish. I'll be racist to you, but then you are Spanish. You just flip it back to me. But like to a prison, I split it. There we go, reverse racism. The guy's over there, he'll go one better. He'll racially abuse Minnie when he wakes from a siesta. But sadly, he's sleeping, napping in the evening. He comes up, he's like, aye, 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 got a feeling. Aye, 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 referring first person. I know we make it up, there's never the rehearsing. I see the Spanish guy being rude to me. He calls me gringo, and really, I agree. And then I lift up the mustache from his eye. He's in disguise, it's motherfucking Bill Nye. Looking so slick. Bill Nye surprised me. You gave us a tip. I thought he's a nice old man. Apparently he's a dick.
Now I would say that the most important thing of those is at the first, but if I put that first and said I'm good at it, people would go, oh, you're very full of yourself, I guess you are American now.
Or a rapper, because
yeah, well,
there's a certain amount of braggadocio.
Yeah, the braggadocious nature. Yeah, I'm probably one of the least braggadocious rappers, which is bad. It's bad for your
well, actually,
friend.
Wasn't there that trend where Drake and definitely Kanye, they at least admitted to a little of their neuroses? They got so much credit for that. They're being so honest.
Mm.
And all they're doing is being somewhere in the normal Kanye, continuum.
Yeah, there was a period. And then you're suddenly like, nah, I'm the best again. The best thing to do with a heckler in for me, as someone who's not particularly brutal or roasty, is to just kind of make them seem silly. So if someone says something, you know, most heckles are silly. Most heckles make no sense. If they shout something out, I'll just get them to repeat it. I'll be like, what was that? Sorry, what? Oh, that's not a very nice thing to shout at someone you don't know. And then everyone's just like, ah, you're being so patronizing towards them. And it takes away all power. Also, if you get them to repeat it, that's the hack for any beginner comedians. Getting them to repeat the heckle gives you more time to think of a response.
Right.
Obviously, the best way to put down a heckler, I found, was always just immediately, as soon as they say something, if your persona is cheerful, cheeky British man, just call them a very rude word immediately. Just be like, shut up, bleh. And everyone goes, whoa, where did that come from? And then carry on with the fun thing. And everyone's like, is he insane?
He had that in him?
Yeah. The best heckle advice I heard given, and it's kind of as a tangent to a story, was this comedian said to a bunch of comedians, I never get heckled on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, yeah. He's like, why does no one heckle me? And they go, because when you walk on stage, the first thing you do is you roll up your sleeves, and they see all your prison tattoos. And they go, okay, we'll be quiet.
So somewhere in between the continuum of the MS-13 guy and yeah. The British man.
Yeah.
That's we then, can find
and that's
great
why
ways
I came
to
this podcast to reveal my gang affiliations. Oh, no, where have they gone?
So do you think part of the audience being on your side, aside from your expert execution of the quick put down and the repeat, is just that they have a little sympathy? People normally would think of the kind British man who's not bragging. Why are you being so cruel to him?
Mm-hmm. I mean, in the UK, if a heckler is accurate, if someone is being not funny and a yes. heckler goes, you're shit, which is the best heckle. Like, there's not a better heckle than to just go, you're shit. Because if the audience agree with that heckle, which they probably do if you're shouting that, the audience will be like, yeah, he's right.
Yeah.
That's giving you a chance to rebut it and win the audience back. But if you are shit, you're probably not going to win them back. Like, you're not going to have a good rebuttal. And it's a really hard to rebut heckle. It's hard to come up with a witty response to your shit other than to just go like, no, I'm not. Or, well, that's just your opinion. If you're not shit and they shout it, then You go, oh, I'm sorry you think that. I guess all this laughter isn't for you. And everyone was like, yeah, screw this guy. Why is he heckling?
Yeah, or just call him a wanker. That usually,
that does work. I think in the UK, I don't get sympathy because in the UK, I present as slightly posher than your average English person, which is then fun to subvert because I'm from Manchester. I'm self-identified as scum.
Yeah. So this, to translate it to the American audience, it's as if you were from Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. I'm taking some coal city.
Yeah.
It's as if you were from Appalachia.
We were a mill town. Yeah. You know, cotton and mills and the cradle of the Industrial Revolution. If it wasn't for Manchester, you wouldn't have all the factories that, you know, made shit.
For years, that gave you credit. Now you have to apologize for it. Sorry for the smokestacks and the child labor.
Yeah. Now we have to be like, but look at all the music we made back in the 90s, the greatest period. Yeah, not much good Mancunian hip hop, unfortunately.
Yeah, coal and then love will keep you together. So I have gone back and watched your early career and you were, and I found it sideways because I was just looking for one-liner comedians. And there you show up. Mm. And when you were 21 and maybe earlier.
Younger, actually. That video, weirdly, and I wish I hadn't done it. That video is me when I'm 19. That's my first year of doing stand-up. That's after about 15 shows I'd ever done.
Were you in university at the time?
Yeah. And that's why I've stopped doing one-liners, because I was able to write one-liners because your brain processes difficult problems when you're not thinking about them. We know this about great thinkers. You know, think about the thing. Think, and then go for a walk.
Right.
And the brain will solve the problem and it will come to you.
Showers are great for that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I would be writing 2.5 essays a week. And then just when I wasn't writing, my brain would not be trying to solve the problem of the essay. It would just spit out these weird little joke thoughts and I would write them down. And then I'd tell them on stage. And I had a pretty high hit rate, maybe like 50% of the things I thought up were like good jokes on stage, which in one-liner terms is like, really, that's quite rare. I think when you're actively writing one-liners, you have to write 10 to get one good one.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be a hit rate for, you know, people who are good at one-liners. And I never pursued it far enough to get to that level. But, you know, I probably could do like from across my whole career, like the one-liner jokes I've written, I could do maybe a 40-minute special of just one-liners. But all of those would be front-loaded early in my career. Some of them quite cheesy puns, but some of them like quite good jokes that I still would use now. And it was that activity of forcing your brain to really kind of think about something else, and it would spit them out. And then when I left university, my brain didn't work that way anymore. But that video was when I was 19. And then every year, as I got older, I changed the description because I was like, oh, it's referencing the comedian now. So it's like 20-year-old comedian Chris Turner, 21-year-old comedian Chris Turner. I'm like, oh no, fuck, people are going to watch it and be like, oh, it's 37. No, he's not. I should have left it as 19. If I change it now, there. But then this is also helped by the fact that my Wikipedia lists my date of birth incorrectly. They're off by 2 years. They think I was born in 91. I'm born in 89.
So you really appreciated all of the 90s.
I did. Hip-hop scene. I did. I mean, in my last tour show.
You were there for Criss Cross. You were there for the Foo Schnickens.
Backwards Trousers.
Yeah.
My last tour show, one of my favorite songs, and it's called 80s Kid. And it's where I berate a member of the audience for being born in the 90s. I'm like, you suck. I'm an 80s kid. And then the chorus is me talking about how I was born in September 1989.
Yeah.
And afterwards, I'll still have people going, so you're not an 80s kid. And I'm like, yeah, you get the joke of this blustering man being like, I'm from the 80s. It was incredible. Neon, Lycra. Woo, we had a great time. You 90s suckers. Like, but you're born in the 90s. I'm like, oh, yeah, thanks for explaining the joke back to me. I'm not even a woman and you're explaining my own joke back to me. That is, when does that happen?
In the US, that would have meant that you missed Reagan, which technically that defines the 80s. You know this theory that the decades are the decades, but they're also actual events. So the 60s started with Beatles on Ed Sullivan.
Yeah, the 60s is not the 60s. Yeah. The 60s is the
62
late 62
is not the 60s.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. My Reagan knowledge comes from my mother-in-law's hatred and the Killer Mike song, which has the hook, I'm glad Reagan's dead. I'm like, well, I guess he must have been a bad man.
Although Killer Mike, you know, you could be several degrees better than Reagan, and you still come in for the Killer Mike. He is a killer.
High standards.
Yes. So you were, where did you study and what did you study in?
I went to Oxford and I studied archaeology and anthropology.
Oh, right. I saw you mentioned that.
And Yeah, I have like some jokes about it. I think my debut Edinburgh
Did you dig
hour,
up any of them?
Yeah, that was it. The debut Edinburgh Hour was like listed as a show by an archaeologist who digs hip hop, which was fun. My favorite archaeology joke was me just going, I did archaeology at university because I thought it would be just like Indiana Jones. I got there. It turns out you don't get a small Chinese sidekick. And then when some people would laugh, some people would go, what? And I'd be like, hey, come on, guys. Like, you know, stop Asian hate, but also watch Temple of Doom. And it was fun. That's a good joke. And then it's great because the actor who played Short Round is now an Oscar winner. And he's got that film that just came out for Valentine's Day. So he's back in the zeitgeist. So that
he never really left. He's in his film credits of hundreds.
No,
right?
But he left because he was Short Round and he was Goonies. And then it was nothing. Then Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yeah.
And now.
That's right. You eat a monkey brain once, and that's what you're forever associated with. Exactly. He's like the Fonzie of monkey brain eating.
Chilled a monkey brain.
So I do notice that your persona as a one-liner, it's far different from what you have now, and people develop your personas, but
vastly different.
Vastly different. And I would also imagine that maybe you looked around at the people doing one-liners, and they often had they put on an act.
Deadpan.
Deadpan.
I mean, I love Stephen Wright.
Stephen Wright's a good example. Or even Mitch Hedberg. I don't think he's deadpan, but obviously, if you interacted with Mitch Hedberg in real life and, you know, he was not on too many drugs at the time, it wouldn't be exactly like that. And so did you feel you had to adopt that persona?
So, yeah, for anyone who's not aware, it's very deadpan. It's very much just kind of walking on and staring at the audience and being a bit weird, which there was a long tradition in the UK of. So Milton Jones is the most famous one-liner comedian at that time. And was a kind of polar opposite to Tim Vine, who was a one-liner comedian who did puns and was very cheesy and would come on and would be like, hello there, here's another joke for you. Whereas Milton would come on and just look weird. And he said really early on that he wasn't going anywhere in his career because people thought, you're weird. These are weird jokes. And then one night he put on a Hawaiian shirt and stuck his hair up. And everyone went, oh, this guy's weird. And then he told a weird joke and they go, that makes sense.
Right.
The weird jokes mixed with it. And it's like, if you think of someone like Jimmy Carr versus Anthony Jeselnik, both dark one-liner comedians. Jimmy Carr's coming at it from but he's a proper English gent in a suit. He's a very, very polite, posh man saying these horrible things.
Yeah, 40% of his jokes are pedophilia related. Yeah.
Whereas Jeselnik comes on and is like kind of cool swagger. And I think both of those personas could only exist in the country they exist in. That's not to say they don't cross over. But Jimmy coming up wearing a suit telling cruel jokes in the UK works. If you were dressed as Jeselnik in the UK telling cruel jokes, I think people would be like, why are you so mean? This is unnecessary cruelty.
I think in the UK, there probably would be an element of who does this guy think he is?
Yeah.
Because that is a more common sentiment in the UK than it is.
Well,
in
we
the
don't
US.
Like cool comedians in the UK.
Right.
Like,
Saturday Night Live, they're cool. Monty Python are dorks.
Yeah. Comedians aren't rock stars in the UK. A comedian should be like everyone, unless they are the weirdo outsider like Milton or Jimmy coming on and people going, well, of course, this guy's a little bit posher. This guy is, yeah, of course, he's a cruel. Upper class posh. I mean, that's it. He's not, he's wearing a suit. So your average viewer is going to go, oh, look at this. He's a smart posh boy. I think that's a defense mechanism. I know that when I started out, I had very few jokes. So I thought, well, if I leave big pauses, I've got 10 minutes rather than five.
That's what I said to Stephen Wright. I'm like, you know, by speaking slowly, you probably were able to write three fewer jokes a week.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
But that's to say that one-liner comedians' joke density is many, many times more than, to take nothing away from all other kind of comedians where it's persona and storytelling, but the actual number of punchlines is many times more.
Well, I also just wasn't good with delivery and interacting with crowds at that point. If I just do this, I don't have to talk to them. I don't have to do any fancy delivery tricks. Like, you know, there was a comedian in the UK who he got a 1-star review 1 year, and then the next year he got a 5-star review. And all that had changed was his entire stage persona. He had gone from just telling jokes to performing jokes. And the critics, like, I don't know what happened here, but my God, this guy is funny with the same jokes that he had before, because all he's doing is selling them.
But that counts. I mean, we go to be entertained, and one wasn't and one was.
I was definitely very snobbish when I started out. You know, I was like, you should just tell the joke. If the joke's funny, we'll get a joke.
We'll get a laugh, right.
And I was very anti-musical comedy. I'm like, well, why have you got a 6-string applause machine, a guitar, right? Oh, you play a thing and then they applaud. And now the irony is now that I am a musical comedian.
But were you interested in rap back then?
I was. From the age of 10. I was rapping from before I even knew comedy. And I was rapping separately to enjoying comedy. Like the albums I was given by my friend Galeed, who used to illegally download albums for all of us. And you'd say, I want this. I want the Nirvana album. And Nirvana would have 45 minutes, but it'd be a 74-minute CD.
Yeah.
It'd fill the rest up with rap or stand-up.
This was pre-Napster era?
This is Napster
era. Right, okay.
And so it would be Nirvana, and then suddenly it would be Chris Rock and Dave Chappelle routines, and then it would be, you know, random rap. And so I'd be like, oh, this is cool. I mean, also, I kind of came into rap through that kind of multi-pronged approach. So Galeed would be putting on, like, Snoop and Dre. But then I also, when I was, like, 10 at school, was getting, I loved, you know, kind of, you know, the new metal that was at the time. So Limp Bizkit is a kind of rap rock thing. Linkin Park is rap
Korn.
Rock. Korn. But then you've also got Eminem, who's in that period of, you know, we're all 10 years old. There's Eminem, there's South Park, there's this, and Grand Theft Auto. It's this period of just over the top obscenity.
Yes.
Where Eminem is wearing his kind of Jason mask and his, you know, overalls and his chainsaw, and you're like, what is this theater of, like, just absurd violence and cursing and saying things that we don't understand, but it's cool. Like, when you're 10, I remember we looked through the dictionary to find all the rude words, because that was what we could do at school. Like, you can get the dictionary and look through it, and I found all these words. and I can find they're in the dictionary and they're rude.
And we'll be back with a little more of Chris Turner on Funny You Should Mention. We're back with improvisational hip-hop maestro Chris Turner.
Do you think if you grew up in an era where all the obscenity was not something you had to look up or could look up, but was just presented to you and you were inundated with it, your formation would be different?
I don't know. I mean, how do you... All the multitude of possibilities. Because another part of it was my mum would constantly take these albums away from me. She said, you can't listen to this. This says parental advisory. This is rude. What are you listening to? And that's then naughty. That's forbidden fruit. I'm like, okay, well, if I can't listen to the rap, I can make up the rap. So I can make up my own raps. I can, you know, I've spoken about this a bunch of times. I'm also 10, 11, 12. I've got no one to talk to about rap because there's no internet really to look this up. There's no friends my age who care about rap.
Not Galeed or Galeed was in the
future. Yeah, but Galeed is like one of three black guys in my whole year at school. Galeed's not hanging out and talking to the white guy. Galeed's also a Muslim. The other Muslim guys in our class who are kind of from India, they're hanging out with them. Galeed's from Sudan, so he's also hanging out with, like, the other African guys, but there's only three of them in that year.
Yeah.
They're not talking to the weird white guy who's like, hey, I really like that Dr. Dre song you put on. All my friends and me are into Nirvana and... I mean, they all love Pearl Jam. I'm a big anti-Pearl Jam guy. I've got no one to talk to about it. And I just assume that all rap is made up. Anyone else who grew up freestyling grew up knowing that this is what you do. Mike Yard, host at The Cellar.
Yeah.
Every time I freestyle, he'll remind me. He'll go, I mean, he goes on stage afterwards and he'll be like, fuck Chris Turner. He's, you know, he's like, I'm from East New York and he can freestyle rap better than me. Fucking hate that.
And he's like, I've been in jail and Fritz doesn't even have prison.
He tells me, he goes, growing up, he'd hang out in the hallways of the apartment buildings where they lived in East New York and everyone would be freestyling. Mm-hmm. He goes, and I wasn't very good. But he's like, that's what we're all doing. And I'm like, yeah, if you grow up freestyling in an apartment building with other people freestyling, you understand that what you're doing is made up. You learn that rap, that Nas is writing stories about his life. I am listening to this going, oh, this is all made up. That's what rap is. Rap is making up a story. So I'm like, how can he just make this up? That's impossible. And you listen to Andre 3000. How can anyone make up something this complex and this brilliant? This must be the smartest person ever.
Right.
Ever. He's so smart. And already at 10, 11, you know, I'd been bumped up a year at school. I had like extra credit all the time. I was told, I had like gifted children, all that kind of stuff. I was like put in all these classes. So everyone was always telling me, you're really smart. You're really smart. I'm like, not as smart as these guys. I've got to do that. And so, you know, for 8 years until I go to university and really, I mean, I'm sure there was a period along the time when I finally learn, but for the first few years of freestyling, I didn't know that you're not supposed to be able to do it.
Right.
You're not supposed to be able to freestyling should be as good as written.
Right.
So I didn't have that limitation of, no, you can't do this. Because when you tell someone they can't do it, it's like, oh, okay, I guess you can't. You place that limitation on yourself.
Another thing that strikes me is, you're right, most of the people who are experts or very good in a field, the usual way is to be steeped in it and to have absorbed it at an earlier age. I mean, this is very common, right? Someone who's a musical prodigy often will be have musical instruments in the house, or look at professional athletes. It's not just the genes. Yeah. It's the fact that they were trained by maybe a professional athlete father when they were young. But there is another category of, I'm going to say, genius that seems sui generis. And they just come from no example of that. So Paul Schrader grows up in, it's not Amish, but it's an Amish-like community. And he's not allowed to watch a movie until he's 17 or 18.
Just to say, one of my favorite Wikipedia articles, and this is when I realize, when people go, how do you know so much? I'm like, well, I don't actually absorb it. How do I have a favorite Wikipedia article? There's a list of the Amish communities. There's like, you know, 20 plus, ranking them by what they shun.
Oh, so it's Amishness. So
it's a list
the
of
the Amishist to the Amish less.
Yeah. Yeah. And they all of them use washing machines. There's not a single one that doesn't use washing machines. But then it ranks. And there's like Amish communities, it's just like, oh, they use everything except widescreen TVs.
Right. And well, zippers are still a little controversial.
It's just, I think that's so fun that you can still be Amish when you're like, oh no, we use cars.
Yeah.
But like, no. Halogen light bulbs? No, come on, never though.
We have the internet, but it's only dial-up as Yahweh intended.
Yeah.
And in that list of Amish communities, from the Amishist to Amish least, is the last line is, and they also shun communities 2 through 18. And then number two is, they also shun communities 3 through 18. Yeah. Yes. They shun the other communities. So yeah, there is this way of not knowing what the rules are supposed to be allows you to have breakthroughs. Or it doesn't usually work. The person usually doesn't have it, the innate ability or the drive or whatever it is. But it does happen. And you're saying something like that happened with you.
I think so. Yeah. And then when I compare it to, you know, how I guess you should be able to freestyle, which is you're training the muscle.
Yeah.
The way I picture it is, the only way you can wiggle your ears is if you were wiggling your ears since you're a baby. Because the muscle that wiggles your ears, when you're a baby, the size of that muscle to the size of your ears matches. So you can use it. And if you keep using it, you can keep wiggling
your ears. Can you speculate as to the adaptive advantage to that?
Well, that's it. This is my evolutionary anthropology degree from Oxford University. Watch it fail me. No, in the same way that, you know.
And the ears are cartilage, so we can't even study the bone, right? There's nothing.
Yeah.
We don't know the wigglers or the wiggles.
But then, no, there's so much leftover stuff. I mean, the thing is, animals can move their ears. They can pin their ears back. They can do all that. So that's where that's from. Sorry if you believe in creationism. You're probably not listening to two New Yorkers.
Imagine if you did, though, and you thought, okay, here's what God did on seventh and a half. He put the ear wiggling gene in certain babies, but with the caveat that you could only keep doing it if you thought to do it when you were 1 month old.
And so I think with me, it's that, like, the brain, and you can see this with language. I mean, I'm such an idiot. I remember one time seeing a child speak English and then speak Spanish. I was like, that child's two. It can speak Spanish. I can't speak Spanish. And I'm much older than that. I'm like, oh, I'm an idiot. But if you start learning language at a young age, it's so much easier because the brain just kind of adapts to those sounds simpler. I mean, Chinese is a kind of very phonetic language. If you don't learn that really early on, you kind of are fucked. It's so much harder to learn Chinese. Because to me, the sounds like shu, 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 right, and shu are the same.
And yet 1.6 billion people do it.
Like, oh, he just said a really offensive sentence.
Wait, no. To be, we should issue an apology. What Chris meant was shu, shu, shu. And now, sir, the shoe is on the other foot. There's one or two questions I want to ask you about the early, very deadpan one-liner days. I have talked to and heard from comedians, Dimitri Martin, they have mathematic minds and they like looking at jokes as a puzzle to be solved. So it surprises me that you are saying that most of the jokes didn't occur to you that way. They were spontaneous thoughts.
Yeah.
How much crafting and refining went into taking those thoughts to
I love Dimitri Martin. I don't look at Dimitri Martin and go, oh yeah, those are jokes that I could write. I was much more like, I would watch Jeselnik and be like, oh, I could guess what the punchline would be. Whereas Dimitri, I couldn't. One of my writing exercises starting out was I would listen to other comedians' jokes and I'd try and guess the punchline. And if I guessed a punchline and that wasn't the punchline, I would then tell that joke. So, you know, say, I mean, one of the ones I remember, Jeselnik had one, which was my girlfriend's dad said we couldn't sleep together, you know, and then his punchline was something else. And I was like, oh, the punchline for that should be my girlfriend's dad wouldn't let us sleep together, which is a shame because he's very attractive, right? You know, and so I'm like, oh, great, cool. Yeah. That's my joke now. Because that's
an upended expectation, it, you know? The ambiguity of the pronoun.
Yeah, so you'd listen to a setup and then, if you came with a punchline, then you'd tweak a setup so you'd find a different way to say it. But yeah, I mean, you'd figure out the words around, like, you want the economy of words in a one-liner. One of my favorite jokes from when I started was the way I wrote it was the opposite way to how it worked on stage. So the joke as it became was, I've just got myself a laminator. It's a machine that kills baby sheep. But if you tell that joke as, I've got a machine that kills baby sheep, it's a laminator, the crowd groan. They go, yeah. Oh, we see what you did there. Whereas if you append the expectation, which is we've got a laminator, they go, we know what that is. That's a machine that. And this is how the brain works with jokes. And this is why timing is actually the most important thing in telling, you know, telling jokes. You want your hitting of the word kills baby sheep to fall where their brain hits. Yeah, we know it's a machine that puts plastic on paper. When you say kills baby sheep, they're not hearing you say that. They're hearing their own brain say puts plastic on paper. And they hear you say kills baby sheep, and they go, wait, what? That surprised me.
Yes.
This is the same with the lucky blue suit joke, which I'm sure we can, I can do the 1 minute version. It's my favorite joke. It's an old pub joke. And this woman goes to the funeral parlor. She says to the funeral director, this is my husband. He died. He's wearing a black suit, but it is his dream to be buried wearing a sky blue suit. I have no money. If you could do something for me, I'd be tremendously grateful. The funeral director says, come back in a week. She comes back a week later. Her husband's lying there, beautifully embalmed, wearing a sky blue suit. And she goes, oh my gosh, I can't. Thank you so much, but really, this looks gorgeous. I cannot afford this. I told you I have no money. And the funeral director says, please don't worry. You would never believe this, but the day after you came in, another woman brought in her husband. He was wearing a sky blue suit, but it was his dream to be buried wearing a black suit. So I just switched the heads. And the beauty of that joke is that it's just because I say heads, not suits.
Yeah.
And your brain goes, that's not the word you're meant to say. What? How silly.
But then congratulates then itself on understanding.
And, you know, there's more to it. There's the imagery that you're painting, and there's the solemnity of the situation. There's all these things that come into it being a great joke, but it's one of my favorite jokes for that reason. I think it illustrates, because I think a non-comedian would go, so I just switched the heads, and you go, no, you've ruined the joke now, because you telegraphed that was the sentence. That people want, they go, no, the punchline's going to be here. You put the punchline here.
Yeah.
It really catches them off guard.
Also with laminator and switch the heads, although we say punchline because this is the phrase, you didn't punch it. You backed away from it, Right.
Yeah. No, yeah. If you punch it, you get the.
I switch the heads.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of your jokes from that period, I think, is brilliant. Now, you start off by saying, in America, there is a phrase, possession.
Oh, that's a great joke. Yeah.
So it's really true that, we'll play the joke, and then I'll come back and say, so question one, it's really an American phrase? They don't say that in Britain?
There's an American saying, possessor is 9/10 of the word.
I think the reason that it is a saying.
Yes.
That would be known in the UK. I think I would say it's an American saying for the rhythm of the joke.
Yeah, just to add.
There's a saying. Yes. There's an American saying. To me, that seems. I mean,
there's
again,
a saying like, among. Yeah,
they've just heard it.
Lawyers.
I haven't heard it and I don't remember it. But,
right.
So
yeah, that makes sense. They add a little bit. And as we just heard, possession. Now, I said, that is a brilliant joke. And then I said, wait a minute. And I wrote out possession and it's goddamn 10 letters.
Yeah, it's perfect. I wouldn't have done it if it wasn't.
This is my question.
Yeah.
So when you thought of it, when it occurred to you, did you not know it was 10 letters?
I wouldn't have known. And this would be one that came to me completely.
Yeah.
It would have just been, I would have gone, possessor is 9/10 of the word. I know I would have grappled over pronouncing it possessio.
Yes.
Or possessio. To try it, because one problem with the British accent is possessor kind of sounds like possession.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think in America, it'd be like possessor, possession. I think there's more of a distinction there. There's a British rapper called Central C, who's very big currently. And he says the reason he's so big in America is that he doesn't end his bars, his lines, in a hard to interpret way. He's never going to end on like a word that Americans might not fully understand or could sound like another word to an American ear. So it's
That's
very
brilliant.
Whereas most English rappers rapping in a kind of East London accent, then Americans might be like, I can't quite get my ear around that.
In terms of the mental process, you get 5 suggestions. Is that the platonic ideal? How do you decide that 5 would work better?
It's the right amount. 4. Even numbers aren't nice.
True.
Even numbers aren't good. You always have, you know, an odd number of cheeses on a cheese plate.
Right.
3 seems too few. People can remember 3 things. I know that people are impressed that I just remember the 5 things.
I was going to say that.
They go, how do you even remember that?
Yeah.
You think that's the impressive thing?
No.
I forget one of the things all the time. But then people like that because it's fun when I go, what was the 5th suggestion? And someone shouts out, you know, jelly donut. And then I go in on that and they go, wow, you definitely couldn't have prepared that because you forgot it. 5 is nice. When it's time constraints, I do have to do 4 because it does reduce it. I mean, you know, when I did my Vegas run, there were times when they're like, could you do 4 suggestions to make this shorter? And that was an instance where I had to put more thought into it because the director would say, end the rap on the funniest one. I'm like, well, the funniest one is always the rudest one, or it's to do with booze or sex or whatever.
Yeah.
So, like, that was always my direction there, kind of dumbing it down in a way, because maybe it's the late show and you need to, as in the late show of the, you know, the run, you do 2 shows a night in Vegas. It might be a case of someone says chlamydia, because what I like to do, and you'll notice this watching videos, if someone goes, rap about Ukrainian herpes, my interest is not in rhyming Ukrainian herpes, okay? My interest is in rapping about Ukrainian herpes. Anyone can rhyme Ukrainian herpes. Anyone can get a rhyming dictionary, learn all the words, and rhyme them. And that's right. What most freestyle rappers do.
Right. And you should do exercise to get
burpees. It's a parlor. Very good. Very good. It's a parlor trick.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas freestyle rap, as I see it, is exploring the topic we're rapping about, whether you're doing that in a hallway with your friends, you're rapping about your life or your day, or you're rapping about your buddy you can see there. With mine, I like to rap about them. So I'll bring up the topic.
Yes.
I'm not necessarily rhyming it. So you don't get the pop. The pop is when you go, they go, oh, he said it. If you say it at the start of the sentence, it doesn't get the pop. You take off and explore, and that's when the creativity comes in. In this Vegas run, it was like, finish on the last rude one and don't rap about it. Just set it up and be like, you know, I could use antibiotics, but still can't get rid of you. That's why you make sure you don't get chlamydia. And then they go, oh my God, he did that thing. I'm like, that's so basic. And anyone can do that. Oh, you dog just salivating at the bell.
Yeah. But sometimes you do naturally end on the mic drop reference to.
Yeah.
Yes.
But then if that's not me trying, that's if it comes about naturally.
Yes.
And you can tell I like it because if you watch me when I'm rapping, if my final thing is me being like my big clip where it's like 19 million views, I'm like, they call it a sausage because someone's like, rap about sausage. When I'm doing something like that, that's me. I'm never thinking about that in advance. It's me just going, oh yeah, look at that. Look how I looped that back in a clever way rather than from the start, I knew I was going to end on that. If I know I'm going to end on it, it's less satisfying for me. If someone says something in advance and I go, when I'm getting the suggestion, if I go, well, the obvious joke is this, and I'll save that to the end and I'll set it up and there's the obvious joke, and they go, ah, oh, inside I'm going, well, yeah, because I cheated. I thought of it and then I said it, rather than freestyling, which is, well, I didn't think of it and it was still amazing.
Yeah. Except every other comedian, when they think of their closer, is a joke that they know will work, because it's just the difference between the improvising aesthetic and what you value and the standard comedy aesthetic, which is, let us work out this joke until we know it gets a good reaction. You're very proud of that. You haven't cheated.
Yeah.
Ali Wong did not cheat when she ended her show with, you know, the mic drop moment, bringing it all back and tying it all back, even though she didn't think about that just once, you know? She did it and executed it perfectly. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I'm the person, you know, who are we performing for? I think this is a question you ask all comedians. Who are you performing for? Are you performing for the audience? Are you performing for yourself? Are you performing for your dad? I'm performing for me. And that's one of my flaws as a comic. The greatest comics are performing for the audience. I think, like, big examples are Jerry Seinfeld is performing for himself. I think if you look at comedians over time, there are comedians who began performing for the audience and then ended performing for themselves.
Carlin.
I think that's how you can see, oh, it gets less good. That I think you have to be performing for the audience to be. I'm sure there's plenty of examples about this, but I'm performing for myself, and that's my problem. And it's like, why, when people come up to you and they're like, that was amazing, that was the best thing we've seen. If your instinct is to go, I'm so glad, thank you.
Yes.
My instinct is to go, oh, you should have seen the last show. I'm trying to have fun. I want to enjoy myself. So if someone goes, blah, 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 I'm like, oh, yeah, what do you think about that? Oh, why do you like that? Yeah, really great. Sometimes that's me trying to squeeze a suggestion for more. If someone goes, birthday, great, I could do a rap about a birthday, but brilliant. How old? How are you feeling about that? Okay, existential dread upon approaching your 40s.
And then you have
that's
a
much better suggestion, because right. Most suggestions are bad and I have to massage them a little bit.
Yeah, I notice now you're making rules. Nothing about being British, no animals. And what was the third one?
Or be creative. Yeah. No food or animals.
No food. But sometimes someone will throw it at you.
Specific food or animals, I will be fine with. If someone's like a spectacled bear, great. Yeah. Lovely. Yeah. Fantastic. If someone is... But then
I think I saw someone did the spiny anteater or some variation of scorpion. Like that, yeah, dogs are the worst. Yes.
Yeah, dogs and pizza. It's a common thing. But if someone is like the ortolan, I'm like, brilliant. Well, that's food and an animal, but I will rap about it because that's niche and fun. Although I feel like the ortolan was something I knew about 20 years ago and now everyone knows it. In the same way I feel about axolotl. Axolotl was my favorite animal when I was 8 years old. And everyone's like, what the fuck is that? Now, everyone knows what axolotls are. There's plushies of them everywhere. And it really annoys me because it makes 8-year-old me look like an absolute loser. This basic bitch 8-year-old who was like, I like the smiling salamanders from Mexico. No, fuck off. I was on those way before anyone else.
When you think of a rhyme, do you think of it in pairs or will you? Well, how often do you think of the pair and how often do you just say the first line and then challenge yourself?
It's the challenge. Because most, again... Early, when you're starting to freestyle rap, you're thinking, I need to rhyme this word, so I'm going to say this word first. Now, I'm like, I'll just say the word when I think of it, and a word will come that rhymes with it. It's not, I say this all the time, it's not chess, where you're thinking five moves ahead. It is tennis. I will say, I play neither of these sports. Chess, a sport?
Sure.
Yeah, look, if you have things up your bum vibrating to table, move to make it a sport. The ball comes and you play that shot. And then you maybe try and predict what the opponent's going to do. But if you do that, they're going to catch you out. So you just play that shot. And I think, you know, I don't know if that's correct. Is Novak Djokovic going after this? He'll do this, not this? No, I think, you know, I'm saying Novak Djokovic because he's the great that's still playing. I do not like him. That's not an original take to be like, you know, I find Novak Djokovic fundamentally unlikable.
You want to be around people who do vaccinate. Is this what you're saying?
I want to be around someone who's Spanish with one very big bicep. Nadal. I think you're just like, he's going, I'm going to play this shot as well as I can, and then I'm going to react to yours.
Right.
And I trust that I can return whatever shot you do. And I think that's me. I think I'm like, oh, no, I'll find the next thing. I illustrate this like in Lord of the Rings. There's a bit where they're running and the bridge is falling. And as each stone falls, they jump off it just in time to the next one. Or a Looney Tunes where they're running off the thing and they're laying the road underneath them as they run. That's the closest thing. They're not laying the road there. I'm going to jump onto that one. No, they're just going,
yeah.
Let's just keep going. And if we think about it, we're going to fall. But if we keep going, we're fine.
But in Looney Tunes, when they run over air, they're fine until they look down. And when they look down, that's probably an analogy to what you do.
You're in flow state until you acknowledge you're in flow state.
Yes.
Wile
E. Coyote was in flow state. That's what he was.
There are moments in the rap.
Yeah.
These are my favorite moments. And these are the worst moments in the rap. There are moments in the rap where I want to stop the rap and go, did you all just hear that? Did you all just see what I did? I don't think enough of you appreciated that mental link and that pun I just put in. Rewind the tape, DJ. Listen. There we go. Why are you all booing? Why don't you like me anymore?
Do you have a philosophy, or do you think that are the rhymes better when it's an end rhyme versus what they would call in poetics an enjambment, which, you know,
across the bars.
Yeah. Would help.
I mean, no, but that's just a because everyone goes, oh, but how can you rhyme? Everything rhymes. Every word contains letters. Every word contains different sounds. You know, enjambement doesn't have to rhyme with mon. It has omb.
Yes.
In it as well. It also, you can spell it. You could also bring up the fact that it's French. And there's all these things. You know, I mean, the illustration for this is Snoop Dogg loves to say izzle at the end of words. He also loves to spell words. California. Well, that doesn't rhyme with hey. Yeah, it does, because it's spelled California. Oh, brilliant. You know, I should have warned you. I'm coming up from California. You know, there's so many different ways you can do a thing. You can split things. Now, for an audience, yes, if it's a later show, they are going to like it more when you hit the word at the end and the end. If you split the word over the two bars, they're going to go, wait, is he rhymed it? Oh, he has rhymed it.
Right.
It's just not as immediate.
And they'll maybe accept it until your next end rhyme. End rhymes are punchlines, I guess, in your game. All right. I want to do one. You want to do one?
Yeah.
You got it in you? Do you want to do this with five suggestions? Would that work for you in this context? Okay. Yeah. So
have you prepared your suggestions?
I have not. The reason I open this up is just, this is the notes function of my phone. So I'm just going to get some titles from recent notes. For instance, my first recent note is Chris Turner. That wouldn't be good.
That's me.
Yes.
I love how you didn't capitalize my surname. Wow.
All right. So one I have is something called Springer. Jerry Springer. Is that good?
I've interviewed Jerry Springer.
Before he died?
Yeah, no, I did it with my crystal ball and burning sage.
Then I had not Jewish. So you want to just take that as Goyim? Okay. Then I have cabinet nominees.
Great, yeah.
I was going to say Trials of the Century, but that rhymes with, oh, here's a good one, because it's not. LegalZoom. Do you know what that is?
Vaguely.
It's the service that people use to not hire a lawyer.
It's because they had that AI court case recently.
Yeah. And then Hispaniola, that's in there.
Yeah, that's the ship, in it. Whose ship was it?
No, I think that's the name of the island that the Dominican Republic and
that's
Haiti.
That's what it was called.
Yes. So as a unit, Dominican Republic and Haiti or Hispaniola, also called the Antilles. How many is that?
That's five.
All right.
So we had not Jewish, Goyim, Jerry Springer, cabinet nominees, LegalZoom, and Hispaniola.
All right.
I will say these are five good suggestions. And by good, I mean ones that I would be like, if there were two of these in a show, I'm like, fine, I'm going to lean heavily on the other three to make this rap good. These are, we don't have an audience to entertain here, so this is just me. Oh, sorry.
Michelle's here. Wait, good suggestions because they're bad suggestions, you're saying?
No, they're good suggestions because they're hard suggestions.
Yeah.
I feel like you, because if you watch enough of my videos, you can figure out what I will find it hard to rap about. The answer is specific sports people from America's past. And I will really struggle on those. No, these are good. They're not...
I think Hispaniola is the greater Antilles. It's also known as that. I think.
I mean, the Dutch had some Antilles as well.
They all had Antilles.
Yeah, but then, you know, they lost them. So I guess that's their Antilles heel.
Well, that actually, I had an Antilles, and now she's my late Antilles. Like the Dutch, we lost our Antilles. So, do we have this beat?
Oh, yeah, we have a beat. Oh, shit. Can you pump that up on my phones, please, DJ? Well, this is a freestyle about cabinet nominees, LegalZoom, about Hispaniola, about Goyim, and about Jerry Springer. I don't know which one to start with. Let's go with number one. This is lovely stuff. So many you could bring her, let me pop off the dome, I can see Jerry Springer. Get this, no tricks up the sleeve. If you start a fisticuff, then I'm shouting out, Steve, come up here. That's security, opposite of purity. People look at these and they're trying to be, figure out DNA in the fatherhood. When I watched the show, I thought that it was rather good. I watched Jerry, let me say I'm spitting some. Born in the UK, he's a British citizen, true fact. Born in Highgate Tube in the Blitz in the 1940s. I've proved that I've read his Wikipedia, interviewed on stage about in 2015. That's a real age. He said to me after we did the show, Chris, I really want you to know you're a good interviewer, better than most. That is true. I'm not just braggadocious boasting about that, but sadly, RIP, you were saying, did you interview him posthumously? Of course it couldn't happen. Why can't provide it? I'm not a psychic. Yeah, got a nice hit. When I ride the mic, it's incredible. You know they're split it in two like Hispaniola. Yo, Haitians gonna hate. Not been doing very well on the late. Got a president that's shot by the people coming from Colombia or some other South American, that's fun for you. But other side, yeah, still in the plan. They be coming up Republic of Dominican. They can split it down there like the hispy hibiscus in my drink makes it ever so fizzy. I can see people on there keeping in touch. Got my nice little pancake weed smoking Dutch saying, oh yeah, je coche greater Antilles. Don't make a mountain out of a molehill, that's silly. I think that's some type of anthill pun. If you want to be an attorney, then Sean, you gotta make sure you leave some mental room. Or really, AI's gonna take your jobs, cause LegalZoom is swooping in like an eagle soon. They're gonna take it clear out the whole judge courtroom. I sound like I'm from Georgia, cause last night I watched Juror Number 2. That was pretty hot, it's in Georgia, cause it's in the courtroom with the judge. LegalZoom got analysis, they won't budge. Reading all the outtakes from all of the rulings. Got the freestyle flow to leave you drooling. And now we're gonna see the Goyim. Even though I am one myself, I can't really avoid him. I can prove this, gone through this. My penis not Jewish, never read the Torah, never gone screw this, never had money when I turned 12 or 13. No bar mitzvah, I'm keen. I was never going to all of the yeshiva, all of the stuff, best believe you. One more thing, soothing like an ointment, the opposite of all Trump's cabinet appointments. I was getting scared like every day. Seriously, is our health ruled by RFK? Put that sharp sword back in the scabbard. What's next? Oh, motherfucking Tulsi Gabbard. She be coming up there, not sparing your blusher. She's like, actually, I really, really like Russia. Oh, Tulsi. Don't insult me. All of Trump's fans, yeah, they're doing somersaultsy. And don't forget Elon, we want. He's unappointed, like 3+1, the fourth whole thing of the whole, what they called, Congress or the House. Yeah, we got to impress. Ah, that's the shit. Yeah, you know, we set them straight. Cabinet appointments going past it every day. I mean, I've not got a punchline for the end of that, but.
Does the music have to end?
No, it doesn't, but I'm done.
These were the rhymes that Chris Turner wrought. Thank you. And that's my final thought.
Oh, there we go. Very good. Very good.
It's freaking amazing. This is why it's a magic trick.
And I will also say, I mean, we were talking about how a freestyle rap in front of a crowd is different because I have to end with a finish. And even if like, I'll throw in a finish shot. If I don't have a line to finish on, sometimes I'll just finish with a rhyme or whatever. But I might be like, you know, I can cue them to clap and cheer of my final line by being like, so that was the rap that we did, you know, blah, blah, and then they'll start going like, woo, you know, and then I'll say whatever I want at the end. Or I'll just be like, you know, like, ah, oh, that's how we spit. It's a freestyle rap from a Brit. And they're like, woo, in here, it doesn't fucking matter. I can just be like, yeah, whatever, I'm done. Well, which is like when I was live streaming, I used to just like, sometimes I let the rats peter out because I'm like, you all know I can do this. who am I proving it? I'm not proving it to anyone. I'm not going to artificially create a punchline to entertain the other.
You don't have, right. You didn't come in and say at one point in this interview, watch this nerdy white guy actually spit bars.
Yeah. No, those are fun to rap about.
Did you? And you liked it. You enjoyed that.
No, I enjoy doing it. Yeah. I enjoy the act of doing it. If I'm not like, again, I don't care whether that's good or not. I enjoy doing it and the creativity that flows forth. And, you know, also, I mean, again, it's the thing. People go like, oh, you did this rap about this. And they assume I'll remember because everyone thinks I've got photographic memory. I have the worst memory. I have a terrible memory. The way my brain works is I do not remember things. I don't remember hardly anything. I mean, my wife remembers everything.
Yeah. It's good to have that in a relationship. One,
it is. Sure,
one's the hard drive and one's the gas processor. Yeah.
Yeah. My gift is, my gift every year from her is a photo album. And it's nice to look through and she'll be like, this is last year. I'm like, I don't remember any of this. And for some reason, the way my brain works, I don't store things like that. Information will kind of come up in the raps. But I'm blacking out when I'm doing the raps. So I don't remember what I've said about. I mean,
do you think hypnosis would work with you if you were asked to rap during it? Maybe you could dredge up memories.
Maybe
it's all there.
Maybe it is. I wonder. Anyone who wants to hypnotize me and do it. I used to freestyle to hypnotize. That beat is such a good one to freestyle to. It's 101 BPM. It's a good beat.
Chris Turner appears at the Comedy Cellar. He also has, and this is why I'm reading it off, an iPhone. You could hear his new podcast.
It made it sound like he also has an iPhone.
He has an iPhone. He's got a VCR. His wife gives him photo albums. He recognizes most of the people.
You know, there's a 50 Cent song where he lists the things he has in his car, which is stash box, cash box, Xbox, fax machine, phone. And I always heard that and went, he's boasting about a fax machine. What's he doing? Drive-by admin?
That's right. He has to. And also is the people that he's dealing with, they're insisting on the facts. They're not scanning.
That's why he got shot multiple times. Like, we said by fax.
We do not take PDFs, motherfucker. The name of Chris Turner's new podcast is Godforsaken, or maybe Godforsaken with Chris Turner. Chris, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
And that's it for today's show. Michelle Pesca is CBSO. Corey Warr is the producer. Ashley Kahn is co-CBSO. Kathleen Sykes writes up the old gist list. Oh, you should check it out. It's very educational. Astrid Green does our socials and Leo Baum. He does a little bit of everything. Upru G. Pru, Du Pru. Thanks for listening.